The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here is your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. It is currently about 12 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock. Our guest today in the studio is Dr. Tom Haller, and he is going to be speaking next week at a presentation at the Huron Intermediate School District. There's a dinner, and then there's his presentation. It's about the six best parenting strategies ever, all part of Parenting Awareness Month, which we're going to have a series of shows on in this program starting today and through the month of March, which is Parenting Month. I want to thank you for being with us today, Doctor.
Hey, my pleasure, Craig. Thank you.
Give us a little background of how you got into this line of work dealing with parenting and relationships.
You know, your listeners might be more familiar with me. I am the chief parenting and relationship correspondent for WNEM-TV5.
Oh, okay.
And they see me every week, and on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on Weekend Wake Up, and I address parenting and relationship questions live on the air, and have been for TV5 for several years. Prior to that, I have a private practice in Saginaw. I've been a psychotherapist for over 22 years, and so I work regularly with families, with parents, with adolescents, teens, children, addressing issues of building stronger relationships in the home as well as creating accountability. And I've written 7 books, a couple of them for teachers. So I lecture to teachers and then also to parents. And that's what this upcoming one is mostly going to be geared towards, parents. The strategies can be used in the classroom as well, but I'm going to mostly be talking about how to use it in the home on raising responsible, caring, confident children.
Parents are the front line in raising children, right?
Yes.
There's no getting around that. Teachers are kind of a tool that the parents use to help raise their kids, but it's usually the parents' responsibility to raise the kid.
Well, it should be that. I think a lot of parents sort of shuck that responsibility and try to pass it off on the schools and rely maybe sometimes too much on the teachers and not do enough in the home. And my focus is to say, hey, it starts with the parents. It starts in your home. And I frequently say, you know what? I put this at the top of a lot of the workshops on the board that I do, is you have to change yourself first, and your child will follow your lead. And that's where it starts then. It's going to start with the adults in the home.
And it doesn't matter what your childhood was like. You're the parent now, and you can do the right thing.
Yes, you can make the choice to do the right thing. And you really, look, parents don't have a lot of time to sit down and to read through volumes of books to try to figure out the theory and what's the right strategy and technique. So, you know, that's what I do and have done for a living. And so I narrowed it down and looked at a variety of different techniques and what's effective and what really is taking place and how to best utilize that technique and just packaged it into one evening. You get the 6 strategies that you can use and apply and pick out for anything going on, no matter if it's from a toddler to a teen to a young adult. You know, I even tell some of this stuff works on your husband too. So it's applicable at all different ages.
Is consistency key to this when dealing with kids? Maybe that's why teachers aren't the best, you know, pseudo parents for kids, is because they get a different one every year. Is consistency with the same person really essential?
Consistency, or what I would like to twist it the other way around and say, inconsistency is the kiss of death. Because, yes, you need to be able to follow through in a consistent manner so that the accountability that you're doing with your children is predictable, that they know when I choose to do this, this is what happens out of it. They need to know that it's their choice and that the outcome is in their hands, and that's a consistent, predictable outcome.
And we were having a little discussion before we went on the air, and we used the word discipline, and you have a little different view of the word. Yours goes more to accountability than any type of corporal punishment.
Exactly, and that's kind of what we were talking about earlier, Craig. When I said, you know, I have an issue with discipline, and more of it is the definition of the word and how people are using it. I put them on a continuum. If you have on one end punishment, and then on the other end just consequences. In the middle, we end up with this word discipline. And if you look at the word discipline comes from the word disciple as a root word. And what does disciple mean? It means to teach. All right. It is not to punish. And so what I know about discipline approaches that lean too much to the end of punishment is that it is interpreted in the mind of the child that you, as the parent, are doing this to me. And it's not teaching them then. It twists in their mind that something's being done to me and there's a disconnect about me doing this to me. I made the choice. This is my behavior and I'm in control of my behavior. And so when they lose that disconnect, now they place a blame on everybody else and everything else. And so I like to get away from even talking about the word discipline because it's too much used like punishment. And I move more towards accountability and consequences and outcome. So I want to be real careful here to make people realize that I'm not saying we don't discipline our children, but if we don't punish our children. They don't need to be punished. It's not how they're going to learn how to behave responsibly next time. We hold them accountable. That's where I lead, and that's what we're going to talk about with the strategies coming up in a week from Thursday.
Do you have to rule out any physical problems, ADHD, other types of things that may be causing the child problems that may need to be addressed before you get to, teaching them the right way to do things?
Well, I think you need to be aware of what are some of the issues behind the behavior. It's not an excuse. Having ADHD or ODD or any of the other, acronyms we can give, that doesn't give anybody an excuse to mistreat other people or to make inappropriate choices. It's then we have to be aware that there's more going on for them, and the techniques are still the same technique, and we have to adjust how we apply it based on the need of the child.
Do you have to customize it for each child you have in the family? Because you can have twins, and, they can be quite different. I mean, and they started off at the very same beginning, but they go out in their own directions.
Well, I'll give you one of the strategies that we're going to be talking about is what's called the one-minute behavior modifier. And I can take any unwanted behavior that you're confronted with your child, and we can set up a script of how you bring that unwanted behavior to the child's awareness. And you tell them, you give them a result that it's going to cause in life and family, and here's a different way to get that result. And you know what? So it could be whining. Well, you might have one child that whines, but the other one might not. So you adjust the strategy and technique toward the one child that whines. Well, the other one might procrastinate. The other one might be a plunker and just drop things everywhere. You know, it's the same strategy of eliminating the unwanted behavior, but it's to the issue that you're struggling with that I apply it.
Does this sometimes put kids facing off against each other for attention, that maybe the unwanted behavior gets them more of the attention they crave?
Yeah, that becomes part of what that sibling rivalry approach. And one of the things we can work on with children is, hey, if you're wanting attention, here's another way to get it. You're right, you can get attention positively or you can get attention negatively. So, in this way, it's almost as if we're moving in, you're getting attention from me now, but it's not the kind that you want. It's the kind that creates a limit for you that you didn't want to have set up in your life. So, you know what, if you want my attention, here's another way to get my attention, and let me show you how to do that. And then there's a different need for different people. So your brother or your sister might get my attention in a different way than you do because they have a different need than you do. And so we're going to, my job as your parent is to help, you know, meet everybody's needs as best as possible, and I'm going to balance that as best as possible, and sometimes somebody needs more, and sometimes somebody needs less. When you need more, here are some ways to let me know.
Okay. Do you have to, do parents need to learn to be more positive with their children? Sometimes, you know, if you have a business, you know, the only time you hear anything from the outside is complaints. I mean, do you need to actually almost teach yourself to be more positive, to give your children positive reinforcement so that they don't need all this, they aren't doing the wrong things to get kind of attention?
Well, the kids aren't always doing the wrong things.
Right.
Do they do a lot of things that are irritating, annoying, and frustrating? Yeah, but they're not always. There are times when they are doing the right thing, and we need to know how to draw out of them more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the strategies that I talk about in the 6 Best Parenting Strategy workshop that's coming up, is that we talk about, one, the positive anger explosion. How can we take the explosion of anger that we oftentimes see in a lot of kids, or that we feel coming up and welling up within inside ourselves as a parent, and how can we have that come out of us in a positive way and teach that to our children? That's one. And the other one is the other strategy I talk about is that of praise, and how do we praise effectively that actually brings about more of what we want and less of what we don't want.
Is part of that strategy just to learn to release it as it comes rather than letting it bottle up until it explodes into something? A lot of people, you know, I don't have time for this. I just, you know, they pass on it, but it stays inside you, and it just, like a pressure cooker, starts building up, and it usually comes out at the most inappropriate time.
Well, yes, that's one of the, I mean, that happens to be one of the techniques that I talk about with couples is in you know, husband and wife relationships and your coupling relationships is you need to get stuff out and not let it bottle up and build up inside, and then, you know, at the end of the month you have every month we have this great big fight, and then we make up and we're not addressing the little pieces as they come. So that's something we need to learn as adults and how we relate to each other, and it's something that we need to teach kids in how they relate to their peers, their siblings, and how they relate to us. So you do have to have that ongoing, but how do you let that out? How do you bring that up in an effective way without hurting somebody else or wounding them with your words? That's one of the strategies that I do talk about on Thursday. We'll be getting into how do you teach that to your kids so that they're better at doing it more on an ongoing basis, where they're letting their feelings out but doing it appropriately. And that's a technique that I call a describe technique.
And these are things that kids learn from their parents that they take into adulthood. If they see you coping with it and how you do it well, that's a gift you can give them in the future.
Well, that's that model and the message. As a parent, you're never not on. In other words, you're always being watched. You're always on. Even in the times that you don't think you are, though they're in the other room playing with their toys, they're still picking up something. They're still aware. They're still noticing. So you've got to see yourself as always being the model. And so what a lot of parents run into is what I call the coercive trap. They end up modeling the very message that they're trying to extinguish. So when they see their kids having a little scrum, or they're fighting, or they're angry about something, the parent moves in with aggression, and they move in with more aggression to stop the aggressive behavior between the kids. And in essence, what they're doing is they're modeling how to be aggressive in a different way. And so then you're just perpetuating the very thing that you're wanting them to not have. So parents have to be very aware of when they move in with whatever their children are doing, they have to know how to move in a way that doesn't model the inappropriate behavior.
Do parents sometimes make the mistake of trying to be the perfect parent, which is probably an oxymoron?
Well, I get asked that all the time, Craig, and when I'm doing question and answers at the end, I always leave time for people to just, you know, ask. And sometimes people say, well, what would you give as the definition of a parent? And I say, oh, yeah, now, the definition of a parent is a mistake maker. You are going to make mistakes along the way. There are books out there for parents. There's not really a specific handbook on the only way to do this. There are ways to approach children from a lot of different points of view, and it depends on your child. So we will make mistakes. I've written 7 books on the subject, and you know what? I still make mistakes with my kids too, and I have to know that and learn and grow from that. Talk about it with my children. Let them know that wasn't the way that I felt best about doing it, and I'm making some changes, and here are some other ways I'm going to approach it in the future. I have to own up to that and know that I'm flawed too, and I'm learning and growing along with them.
And is that one of the really major things that a parent can teach their child, is how to fail gracefully, not to be a bad loser, this preoccupation we have with having to be number one in just about everything, and there can only be one number one. Is that a great gift you can give your kids, that they know you can fail and you can still pull out of it and be a great person?
Well, you know what, mistakes are made all the time, and it's really in what we do with the mistake where growth takes place. So that we have to help kids see that the failures that they have and the mistakes that they make along in their life are learning opportunities. So let's pull back on that and let's, spread it out a little bit and take a look at it. What is it that you need to learn here? And let's help you learn it so that you don't have to keep repeating these similar mistakes. And so then we can begin to take down some of that stigma around the mistake and make it more something that I can grow from. So I don't want to beat kids up. I don't want to beat myself up for not being number one. That's not what's most important. What's most important is that whatever's going on in your life, you're learning and growing through it. And sometimes there'll be mistakes that you can grow from, and sometimes there are other opportunities that come your way that you can grow from.
I've read some books from like scientists and stuff that said some of their greatest things they learned from their mistakes.
You think about some of just the fun things that have shown up in life. Everybody goes back to that silly putty. It was a mistake in the lab that turned out they did something else with it, and that's still something that we have to pass on to kids too, to take down that whole feeling that comes that I'm not good enough, and there's something wrong with me when I'm not doing what everybody else is doing, or that I didn't get the grade that other people got. And we have to say, wait, this is about you, not in comparison to others, but you and where you're striving and where you're heading and who you're working on becoming.
You're going to be talking about 6 practical strategies. Can we go through them quickly, one by one, at your meeting next Thursday, March the 8th, at the Huron Intermediate School?
Yes. Yeah. I start with the one that I ran over real quickly with you. Is we're going to do the 1-minute behavior modifier, and I'm going to show you really quickly how to eliminate any unwanted behavior, and whatever it might be. Could hitting, kicking, biting, punching, scratching, whining, tattling, bite. It could be anything that you're wanting to eliminate or to remove, take down in some way. How can we help children learn that produces an unwanted result in their life and around other people around them, and without shaming and blaming and punishing, we help them then learn what they can do instead and how to do that differently next time.
Now, when you use the one-minute behavior modifier, you can tell parents what they can do in a minute. It may take a little longer for the child. You'll have to reinforce this.
Right, yes. The one-minute behavior modifier is actually something that the parents can apply in a minute or less. And then they will have to continue that. And that's what we were talking about earlier, was that you do have to be consistent with this. You know, if a child is a whiner and you say, oh, look, that's whining. Whining doesn't work with me because I can't understand what it is that you want in your words. And, you know, if you want my help with something, or if you want to see that toy on the top shelf, say it in a clear voice with clear words. That's your best hope. Well, if you say that to your child and then the next time they whine, you respond to the whining differently and you give them what they wanted, then you said whining doesn't work with me, but you just prove that it does. So if you say it's not going to work with you, then you better stand on that and not let it work with you. And you're going to have to be consistent with that. And it actually doesn't take very long for when you're consistent with that the child realizes, look, that's not how I'm going to get what I want. Here's how I do. And that's what you teach them.
And this consistency has
to... That's the first technique I'm going to go through. It's a pretty basic strategy that you can apply to everything. And then the second strategy is what I call the don't alternative, because a lot of parents get caught up in using the word don't. And what I know about that from a psychological aspect is that don't actually produces... more of the very behavior you're trying to get rid of. It highlights whatever's coming next. So when you say don't run, children actually hear and process in their mind the word run. And it just highlights the word running then. And so if you use the word don't, you're going to get more of what you're trying to stop. So then there's a technique that we're going to take don't away and we're going to put a couple words in place of that to produce more of what you do want.
Okay.
I show parents how to set that up and how to create that.
Okay. Number three is the positive anger explosion. We went over that a little bit. That's something all parents face is anger.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, in the way that I'm going to, on Thursday, I'm going to shift it slightly and say, okay, if you really want to teach your children how to handle and manage their behavior or their anger, then you have to start by managing yours and modeling it over and over in front of them. You can't tell them how to do it and then you do it a different way. So let's start this way. You start modeling it first. So when you are angry about something, you need to go through describing the situation that you're angry about, describing the feeling that you're having around that, because I really think that kids are losing a feelings vocabulary. They don't really know how to express their feelings effectively, and everything gets bottled down and shoved into being expressed as anger when it might not be. So then let's model our feelings by expressing those accurately, and then we can express and describe what's the expected outcome. So now I've laid out in a clean way, really rather quickly, this is the situation that I'm angry about, these are the feelings that I'm having about it, and this is what's expected in this situation. When you do that, you may be angry about it, but when you do that, you don't attack the person's character about what they're doing. And that helps them then learn more effectively rather than become defensive because you've attacked them.
Do we often label anger as a negative emotion when it's really just a part of having a balanced emotional base for ourselves, that we need anger to do it?
Anger is actually one of the four basic survival feelings. We really only have four feelings. We have fear, anger, pain, and pleasure. Those are the four basics that are part of our core self. Some people have heard them as sad, mad, glad, scared. That's the same. Those are the same four feelings. But those four they come up in in different combinations. So all of their feelings and emotions are just combinations or states of those four. So anger is neither good nor bad. It depends on what we do with the anger. That could be good or bad. And so that's what we're teaching kids, is you get to be angry. It's a survival feeling. It's an important one to have. You need to know how to respond to it effectively when you're having it. And that's what this technique teaches then. Here's how you do that. And we're not going to make you wrong for being angry. We're going to help you learn how to express your anger appropriately.
And emotions are very, in my life, I found, very few times is it just one emotion. It's usually a combination or some of this and some of that. A parent can be angry at a child, but they still love them. It almost would seem like a contradiction, but that's the way it works.
That's the complexity of feelings. So yes, you do have different combinations that come in at different times. I mean, another example is that of what we call frustration, or I'm frustrated with. That's actually a combination of fear and anger put together. I'm angry about how this is going, and I have some fear about the outcome of how it's going to work out for me. So those are all different pieces. There's hurt that comes into play, and hurt can get mixed in with anger, and you can have pleasure and hurt together, and they're all different combinations that are sometimes confusing for us as adults, even more so for children. And so we have to do our best as parents to help parse that out and help them understand that and how to express that, whether with feelings as well as with our actions.
Do kids kind of...
That's what I'll be talking more about that in the positive anger explosion. And that's the third of the six strategies that we go through.
Do kids kind of start out with just the basics? They're either angry, they're happy and sad, and then they learn these nuances of how they go together?
Can kids do that?
I mean, do kids start out when they're a child, they're either angry, they're hungry, they're crying or something, or they're happy and giggling? Do they learn the nuances through as they grow up of how to handle two of them at the same time and then maybe three?
Yeah, they have to get better at. I mean, they're already there. I mean, little children, they do get frustrated, they do get irritated and annoyed. Those are all different combinations of feelings. It's as they grow and experience those feelings more regularly, then they can begin to understand them a little more when they're given the opportunities to understand them with a parent that's sort of coaching them or guiding them through the feeling rather than trying to get them to stop having it. Let's help you work through it so you understand it better. When that happens, kids grow up understanding their feelings more effectively and expressing those more cleanly.
And gives them an avenue to express them that works out socially when you're dealing with other people.
Right. They need to learn that. And they don't know that from the start. They have to learn that.
Okay. Number four is the dynamic discipline equation.
Yeah, that's the third one.
I've got it as number four on my sheet, but okay.
We just went through the third one. I'm sorry. Yeah, the positive anger explosion was the third one. The dynamic discipline equation is probably the most effective equation working with adolescents and teens. It works at all other levels, but this is the one that really parents can use, because the dynamic discipline equation is it draws that connection between the choice and the outcome. So we're building this cause and effect relationship, because that's what we run into a lot of times with adolescents and teens, is they don't really hold on to, I'm doing this to me. They blame a lot of other people for the things that are showing up in their life. So the equation is simply this. It's that opportunity equals responsibility. And, you know, so the equal sign, it flips it around. Responsibility equals opportunity. They go together. And I can say, so what we know about that equal sign is that what happens to one side of that equation happens to the other side too. So if it's a math equation, it's 6 plus 4 equals 10. If the 10 goes down to a 9, it forces the other side to have to go down as well. All right, so now we've got 6 and 3 or 7 and 2 or 8 and 1, and so it goes down. That it's the same thing with, here's an opportunity and here's your responsibility with it. If you're not handling the responsibility with that opportunity, then The responsibility went down on your part, and so then does the opportunity go down on your part. And so that there's a key to this one, is that it has to stay related. And this is probably the one that catches parents the most, is they set up their accountability or their discipline structure based on what they think their child likes the most. And they want to remove that from them to somehow cause some kind of discomfort, or so now I have leverage over them. I had a mom a couple years ago. I was out on the soccer field, and I'm standing, you know, watching the game, and I hear this side conversation over to my right, and this mom is talking about, oh, my son's birthday's, you know, he's coming up, and he's going to be 12, and I got him the new latest phone, and, oh, it's this LG whatever phone. It's got all the bells and whistles on it and everything, and can hardly wait to give it to him because it's the first thing I'm going to take away from him when he doesn't do what I want. That's what I'm talking about. That only works if he's not being responsible with the cell phone. If it's anything else, it creates a disconnect, and adolescents and teens don't realize then that they made the choice for this to happen. When it stays connected, they feel it, and that's how they learn. And that's what the dynamic discipline equation sets up. Here's your opportunity. Here's your responsibility. If you choose to not handle the opportunity, then you've decided to have less of it. Not me. You have. Because you knew that going in.
Okay. And all these things, they need to be supported on down the line. Both parents have to be on the same page. If they go home to a grandparent after school until their parents are out of work, they have to be on the same page, or the kid's going to be getting mixed signals.
Well, that's the best case scenario. That is also why a great deal of time I do workshops for teachers during the day, and I'll do professional development for the teachers, and I teach them these same techniques to use in the classroom, and then we have the parents come at night, and I'll stay and do a parent workshop at night so that we're creating continuity as much as possible between what's taking place in the school and what's taking place in the home. So I'm going to encourage everybody, to sign up for Thursday, the 8th, as a couple. Bring the extended family, whoever's taking care of your children, grandma, grandpa, mom, dad, come together and learn these techniques all together as a family. And then that's something we're all doing. We're all on the same page. It will be more effective, and the children will learn much more quickly that this is the new structure in our family, and they'll hold on to it better. So, I don't know that we said this, but the registration closes on Friday. That's the last day for getting registered. And we already have over 120 people. A couple weeks ago were already registered. They had to move to a different venue, and so if you want in, we moved to a bigger place, so you can still get in, but you got to get registered by Friday.
Terrific. We're getting kind of close to our time here. We got a few minutes left. I want to get to the other ones, the I Can't Eliminator.
Yes, that's the fifth strategy, and the I Can't Eliminator, the I Can'ts that we say are the greatest ways that we put restraints on ourself. When we say I can't, that's something that we're limiting our own ability and how we think about it, because most I can'ts are actually not true. Because if we put all your energy, all your effort, all your resources toward that thing that you're saying you can't, you probably could, or you could get awful close. And so when kids get caught in an I can't mode, it's a stuck mode. And so then they're not learning, they're not applying what they do have as a resource to them. So we have to eliminate that or remove that. And I was going to say this in the workshop. Let me say, whenever I take away something and say, that's not effective, that's not going to work, remove that from your vocabulary, I'm going to give you something else. And that's what I'm going to give then on Thursday night, or what are five or six other things we can say or do when a child says, I can't. You know, I can't tie my shoes. I can't learn math. I can't do this homework. I can't put my clothes away. What? How should a parent respond to that so that the child doesn't stay stuck in the I can't mode and the unable to perform mode? How do we move them forward through that? So that's the fifth strategy we're going to talk about. And then the sixth one, the last one, is that whole praise exchange piece that we touched base on just a little bit earlier at the top of the hour. When you have behaviors that you see in your children that you want more of, there's research that shows a certain kind of praise, and there are basically three different kinds of praise that we would use. A certain kind of praise has an inherent, it's not terrible, but it has an inherent way of being denied or disowned. We want children to own what's going on in their life and see that they're producing it. And so I'll talk about the three different kinds of praise: the evaluative praise, the descriptive praise, and appreciative praise, and which one we need to drop from our vocabulary and how to use the other two that can bring about more of what you want and less of what you don't want from your children's behavior.
Terrific. And we'll look forward to seeing you. That'll be coming up next Thursday, a week from tomorrow, March the 8th, the Huron Intermediate School District, the location. They've got dinner served at 5:30 before. And then your presentation runs from 6 until 8 p.m. I understand there will be a question and answer period near the end, so if they have questions that come up, they can get them answered.
Yes. Yeah, right. And I'll be afterwards. I'll have books available there. I'll stick around afterwards. If somebody's got a more personal question, I'll certainly, you know, answer that for them, you know, privately. I just want to give out the number for registration, because I did say, you know, registration ends on March 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
You talk to Shirley. And the number is 989-269-6406. And call Shirley, and she'll be sure to get you a spot registered for that workshop on Thursday the 8th.
And they will have child care provided, so you will have your full attention on what you are telling them and can get the most out of the talk you're going to give.
Yes, they set everything up. They're feeding you and taking care of your kids. You can't beat that. And then I'm going to give you the six best strategies in 2 hours. We're going to fly right through them, and you're going to have all the tools you need right there when you walk out the door. Take your kids home with you, and you get started right away.
I appreciate you taking time with us today.
Hey, my pleasure. I hope to see everybody on TV5 on Weekend Wake Up. And if you got any other questions, you can always let me know at thomas@thomashaller.com. That's my email.
Thank you very much. And again, this is coming up next Thursday, March the 8th, dinner at 5:30, presentation from 6 until 8 p.m., the Huron Intermediate School District, the location. You can call Shirley, 269-6406, if you want to make a reservation for yourself, your significant other, and anybody else who deals with your children that you want to get everybody on board with. And I do want you to stay tuned. Coming up the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news here at WLEW.